Before you listen to this podcast, you can subscribe to The Critic magazine with the current offer of 5 issues for just £10. Head to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk, to subscribe today.
Hello and welcome back to The Critic podcast with me, Ben Sixsmith. And joining me is my illustrious colleague at The Critic magazine. Joining me from America, it's Kitty Helmick. Kitty, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. You wrote a piece for our latest print magazine, which went up on our website at thecritic.co.uk this week, which is about your high school, Thomas Jefferson High School, which is a more unusual school than many. What made Thomas Jefferson High School special when you went there?
Thomas Jefferson is a public school, so it's free to attend, but it has an admissions test because it's dedicated by a special charter to focus on a science and technology education. It's also what they call a magnet school, which means that you don't have to live in the designated area surrounding the school to be eligible to attend there. It draws students from different counties.
And when you went to the school, your experience was very positive. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it's an amazing school. It has a really unique culture.
What makes the culture unique?
I think the biggest thing is that all of the students there are high achievers and they're all dedicated to academics. So they know that their priority is studying, and that completely changes the ball game, both for the students and for the teachers. I remember a teacher told me once that she teaches totally differently for students who are gifted because she knows that they will be approaching the material differently. They'll be asking questions. They want to go deep on the concepts. They want to know what they need to do to succeed in the class. It also created this collaborative environment because partly thanks to the school staff, they told us we weren't there to compete with each other. We were there to help everyone learn. So there is a sense of everyone being in it together for the same reasons.
Excellent. But your piece, it goes into some less welcome developments at Thomas Jefferson High School, since you left. Could you explain what those developments have been?
Yes, even before I graduated, the administration and teachers had started talking about the racial diversity at TJ, which was ironic because in some sense, TJ was an incredibly unusual and diverse high school where the majority of students there were from Asia. But it wasn't the right kind of diversity for the administration and some teachers. So they wanted to reach what they call the underprivileged minorities, which would be Hispanic and Black students. There's already a discussion about how to change the admissions test so that fewer Asian students were accepted and more students from these other groups were accepted instead.
And what kind of changes have they made?
It seems like it's been a long and complicated process, so I'm not sure of all the details, but from what I understand, there was initially proposed that the merit-based admissions test, which originally included questions on math and logical reasoning, as well as essays and recommendation letters, be completely eliminated and replaced with a lottery system. That created so much protest and backlash that instead they created these kind of regional quotas so that all of the middle schools would be guaranteed certain seats, even though the students who were at the top of their class in those middle schools would be performing at very different levels.
Obviously, this has a kind of broader context. I know there's been a debate, for example, in America's Ivy Leagues about whether Asian students have been discriminated against in the admissions process. Coming from the United States, could you explain something about the kind of broader progressive culture which surrounds diversity in education?
Yes, it's always been ironic to me that the United States, though it's committed to this sense of diversity for many decades now, they're very selective about who qualifies to meet that criteria. So If you go back to different points in the history, Irish Americans were discriminated against, but they don't qualify as underprivileged groups anymore. If you look at, I mean, World War II and the internment camps and just the Chinese immigrants who worked on the railroads, there's plenty of discrimination historically against Asian immigrants in the United States, but they no longer count because they're performing well. I would say that the students at my high school were high performers because they were generally from very supportive, well-educated families, two parents. Often the parents would be something like a doctor and a dentist. They were very conservative. Some of them were vegetarian. The students didn't smoke, they didn't drink, they were very selective about dating, all of these kind of cultural conservative norms, even though the families were from India, were not necessarily Christian, but they were socially conservative. And they were very dedicated to prioritizing the children's education. So they excelled in an environment like TJ.
And is it fair
But
to say that since the kind of admissions criteria were changed, the focus on education in terms of, learning and scholarship, and not in terms of pursuing certain political agendas, has been diminished?
yes, the more that the standards have changed, the more that the efforts to qualify for TJ have changed. So when I was a student there, essays and volunteering was a part of it. So and TJ is such a big deal in the region that there are dedicated camp, summer camps to getting into TJ and passing the admissions tests. And students will literally take classes and work with tutors for years, starting in middle school from when they're very young to get in. So, of course, those kind of programs would shift to having them focus on whatever they thought the admissions board was looking for. So, now that there's less emphasis on math and science in the admissions test, then naturally the preparations to get in will also shift.
You made a point in your article about this idea that the progressive attachment to diversity involves a very specific and not necessarily logically justifiable conception of diversity. You talk about how you yourself have Hispanic heritage, but for whatever reason, don't fit the kind of mold of what was perceived of as Hispanic. Could you unpack that a little bit?
Yes, that's right. So my mother's family is Mexican American. Her mother came from Mexico at the time when she was married and learned English by working at a library. And her dad's side is also from Mexico, but they've been in the States for longer. But because I don't look like people would expect a Mexican American to look, and because my name doesn't sound Hispanic, people assume that I'm not, which to me reveals that this diversity push is more about appearances than it is about content. Once upon a time, the idea behind diversity was that you want to have ethnic diversity because then it would expose students to a variety of viewpoints and different cultures. But if it comes down to optics and how much pigmentation someone has or what how their name is spelled, then there's no real content behind that. It's just, does it look right in the admissions material? Does the website have the right shades of color in it? It's really lost sight of the principle that was driving it.
Okay, so it's all about the school photo and not so much about the school. But if I could kind of play devil's advocate for a moment, I mean, you talked about how throughout American history and the history of other countries, people now considered part of the majority were considered a minority. I mean, now we've seen President Biden roaming around Ireland flaunting his Irish American heritage. But yeah, I mean, it's true that many decades ago, Irish Americans were considered quite a distinct minority. What would you say to the kind of progressive who says, we need to have these policies so that we can overcome the kind of structural biases, whatever they may be in the system, and elevate today's minorities to the next level? What would your response be to that?
Even if you say that these kind of policies will help minorities who aren't performing as well, and if outcomes really are your goal for diversity policy at TJ, and I would imagine that the administrators who redesign the test would argue that they're not specifically focused on racial diversity, they're more focused on students who are from poor backgrounds or who just aren't had don't have the same opportunities. Maybe they're like, oh, it's more of a socioeconomic thing, which would presumably make it more constitutional than the current policy has been currently found. But even if that's the case, then simply changing the admission standards won't achieve that goal. Like I said, TJ is not special because of the building. It's special because of the people and the students who are in it. When you have a community like a school, it's not something like a welfare check that you can just hand out to people that you don't think have enough of it. It's like the golden goose, where the more that you start, you're borrowing from the future, and soon enough, that resource will be depleted because you're not investing in it the same way you were before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to give people an opportunity, it's not just about kind of the formal nature of the opportunity, it's about the content of the opportunity. So if you don't make sure that the content endures, then it becomes meaningless, I guess. If I can draw a slightly clumsy comparison, it's how maybe I'd compare it to how people in the UK several decades ago thought, you know, university education is great. So many smart people. We need to make everybody brought up to this level by expanding admissions in the universities, and not quite grasping that, you know, if everyone can go to university, it becomes less meaningful.
Exactly. That's a perfect analogy. I mean, my dad used to call TJ Jefferson Community College because you take so many college level classes as a high school student that it really helps you qualify for coursework at the university you go to next. But like you said, if handing out something exclusive doesn't mean that everyone gets to be exclusive, it just means that the exclusivity disappears.
That's true. And I always like to bookend that point when I make it with the point that, frankly, I wish I'd never had to go to university as well, because I don't think it did me any good or was at all necessary. So I do rule myself out of that exclusivity as well. But to get back to Thomas Jefferson High School and American education in general, if the administrators came to you and they said, well, you know, Kitty, what would you do to make this a more kind of open place to different kinds of people? I mean, obviously, it's a school that's focused on ability, so it's not going to be, you know, everybody come, everybody served, but inclusive in the sense where talented people of whatever backgrounds can get in. What progress would you have made? Or do you think that when you went there, there was really there was nothing that had to be changed? I mean, it was taking something good and then messing with it for no reason.
I think the first thing would be to ask yourself why TJ exists. And I think it's laid out in the charter and the purpose of the school that it's there to teach science and technology. So the focus should really be on how can we do that the best, and not some kind of mission of social outreach that the school wasn't developed for and frankly isn't well equipped to provide. Which leads into the second point, which is that if you're trying to reach eighth graders who are preparing to get into high school, that is far too late to start preparing these students for TJ. Like I said, the students who go there have been working towards this for years. I mean, personally, I didn't live in the area when I was in middle school, so I wasn't involved in all of that. But my dad's an engineer. He was in the army and taught at West Point and did grad school at MIT. Ever since I was little, I was in science camps and robotics camps and doing experiments with him. So if you really want to reach students who don't have those kind of opportunities, then invest TJ's resources, and I would say like the human resources, its students, in programs like going to elementary schools and leading camps for students, going to middle schools and mentoring other students in these areas so that they can qualify and compete for these classes with the confidence of knowing that they have the skills to succeed at TJ, not just the resume to be admitted.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, there's some extent to which admission is too late, because you already can't make the most of the experience because you're not ready for that experience. Absolutely. For some reason, I'm reminded slightly as well of Prime Minister's declaration yesterday that he's going to expand compulsory maths to 18-year-olds, which also struck it's a different policy, but it also struck me as, you know, if you're 16 and you hate maths and you've never been interested in it and you had rubbish teaching, and what difference is 2 more years going to make, as if at 17 you're going to be like, wow, actually I love differential equations. But I always hated maths, so maybe I'm a slightly bad example to use them. Where do you think this kind of psychology comes from? I mean, just on a human level, we can all appreciate the desire for people to be included, but this kind of superficial set, this kind of superficial desire for inclusion, just as kind of the ultimate good in itself. Like, we don't really care what is happening in an institution or what purposes the unit institution is serving, as long as it is inclusive. Like, it's not a means to an end, it's just the end. How do you think that psychology has developed and taken hold?
I remember one day it hit me that for some people, inequality bothers them just as a fact in and of itself. It was mind-blowing for me because I thought, so say that in some magical utopia, everyone has enough to live a good life, but some people have a lot more and they're living an amazing life. For certain people, that seems like injustice. It doesn't to me at all. I say if everyone has at least the basics, whatever that is, that they're healthy, that they're happy, they're prosperous, then how can that be injustice if other people just have much more? But I think that's the mentality behind it, that some people shouldn't have. There shouldn't be a big gap between the bottom and the top, which is a very relative standard, whereas I'd always thought that justice or like social outreach was about an absolute standard of like we want to make sure everyone has the basics at least. But I think for this kind of mentality, it's we're bothered by the difference between people, even if the people at the bottom aren't actually fine in absolute standards, which it's ironic because it goes back to that idea of that you can't d redistribute exclusivity. In a way, it's a rejection of exclusivity as a good thing while also trying to give it to more people. It's a self-defeating project. And I think it comes from an actual aversion to exclusivity and elitism or just the elite, the idea that some students would have more than other students or that some students would outperform other students isn't acceptable. I think it's a shame because really, TJ isn't the best education for every student. It would be a lot more productive for public funding to go into education that covers the core for students. I mean, having a humanities governor's school is just as important as having a science governor's school. I don't think every intelligent, talented student needs to go to TJ.
Yeah, I think there's also, just to add to that, I mean, I think there are people who just they can't really comprehend the idea of some people being more talented and gifted than others. It's not just disliking equality in terms of outcomes, because I'm sure we can all agree that, you know, there are some unfair outcomes in life. Maybe we have to live with it, but they exist, and sometimes they should be ameliorated. But I think some people don't like the idea of, you know, inherent or environmental gifts in themselves. The very left-wing author Freddie de Boer wrote a book called The Cult of Smart, where, as part of this book, he was kind of trying to convince his left-wing audience that, you know, that there really can be two students and one of them is just better at a subject than the other, and it's not because you know, the lesson is biased towards them. It's you know, they're just better than others. And I guess we could debate about how much that's like an inherited cognitive gift and how much it comes down to factors you were talking about, like family stability or the kind of cultural values. But it's not just an outcome of the education system. Like there's a lot of background stuff that goes into it, which you really can't overcome. But have you noticed this in American educational circles, the kind of the rejection of the idea of being gifted itself?
Yes, my mother would always say she thought it was strange that people were totally comfortable with one child being incredibly musically talented or a really gifted athlete, but they would respond with as if they were threatened by a child who is academically gifted. I don't know exactly why we tie the idea of intelligence in with human worth. Maybe it's even related to our sort of rule by experts that the best, the smartest minds have should have the most influence and authority in society. And maybe it's tied into this kind of leftovers from the eugenics movement that if you're not intelligent, you're sort of a less of a person, you have less rights than the rest of people. But I do think it's definitely part of the culture that it's fine if you're a superstar in other areas, but if you're a superstar in academics, then it's something you should really keep quiet.
When I was young, I was a big fan of the English sport cricket, which I'm sure is a sport that Americans find completely baffling. And I decided that if I just practiced enough, I could raise my very meager talents to a, you know, a professional level. So I just went out into my garden for hours and hours trying to perfect my batting, and soon realized that I really wasn't going to make much progress because my hand-eye coordination was just abysmal. And so yeah, I mean that. Hopefully, everybody can be raised above, you know, the lower standards. Obviously, we think that education can make a difference, so there'd be no point in having schools to begin with. But there's, you know, there's always going to be the superstar batsman, and then there are going to be the people who are happy if they score more than 10, like me. So that is always going to be a factor.
I'm afraid that the United States really has lost sight of what the purpose of general education is. And at the time of the founding, when the Constitution was written, the founders knew that it was to encourage virtue in citizens. And literacy, of course, was tied in with knowing your Bible, those kind of ideas, so that if you were a moral citizen, if you had good character, that was what education was supposed to be about, to prepare you to live a good life as a citizen. I don't think people have that sense of purpose anymore. There's more a sense of this competition for jobs and who has the highest incomes and college degrees being linked to your socioeconomic status and your SAT scores. And so I feel like they're attacking things that are much lower down the line. Like you said, it's not that education should have no purpose, but if we don't know what that purpose is, then I think we're wasting time moving these resources around, trying to get kids into calculus class in high school when maybe what they need is a great books class.
Also, if you start with the attitude that you know, the school has to really kind of game the admissions procedure or the outcomes will be unfair, in a sense, aren't you teaching the value that if you get outcomes you're not happy with, that's not a you know, an incentive to work harder. It's an incentive to say, you know, who's screwed with me here?
Whose
You
fault is
know,
this?
an institution is always going to teach values, but sometimes they're not values that we'd like to teach.
I do think it's a shame that this kind of policy changes are implying that those students can't compete with the children who have been succeeding on those tests unless there's some kind of intervention, which isn't much motivation for them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and as you say, I mean, hopefully in education, it's not just about, you know, can I do better than the top person? It's about, can I do better myself? Can I take what I have and then excel maximally to my fullest potential? You know, most of the things I'm proud of in life, if I'd compared myself to, you know, the guy across the street, I might feel a bit more depressed about than if I compared myself to where I began. So that is another value that we hope education can have. Where do you see Thomas Jefferson High School and similar institutions going in the future? Do you think there's hope for some kind of revision of these policies, or do you think there's more of a possibility that they're just going to double down and, you know, we clearly haven't done enough, so we need to go further?
From what I understand, there has been a successful legal challenge against the changes that were made to the admissions test, and a federal judge found it unconstitutional that it had been rewritten with a pretty obvious intent to racially change the racial makeup of the school. So I find that encouraging because just like the parents play a huge role in getting their students to TJ in the first place, they are also invested in their students' education once they get there. And so the active role that these parents are taking as stakeholders means that TJ isn't just at the mercy of the bureaucrats and the educational establishment. So I wouldn't count them out. I think that they've been doing a lot of work over the past several years to protect TJ and to help make sure it's there for the future.
And how much do they include the alumni in this? I mean, do you and your peers from when you were in the school still have a voice, or are you kind of looking and commenting from afar?
I would hope that the students who are the alumni who are still in the area are still invested in it, though I don't know, politically speaking, if they have the same vision as the parents do. But I hope so.
Yeah, it's always interesting looking back at the schools we come from and the kind of the parts we played in our lives. Because it's not like, you know, family where we're always going to be a part of the family. It's not even quite like having an old job. I mean, at least I'm going to put that on the CV, not like my high school. What would you say your school, Thomas Jefferson High School, means to you now? I mean, would you say it's still a part of who you are, that you're someone who's been to that school? Or was it just an experience that you've left in the past?
I definitely say so. I think more than most high schools, because of that sense of unity and purpose, it also shaped the kind of classes I took at college. I still refer back to what I learned in those schools. I personally didn't follow a science track, but I think back often to the foundational principles that I learned in physics and chemistry and biology, because you have such a strong and broad foundation in science. I think that it was invaluable to me, and especially now that science has become a controversial political topic, I think having that firsthand experience of what is experimentation really like, what goes into writing a science paper, has helped me have a broader perspective and just feel more confident.
Sometimes in the UK, we have this kind of debate about the two cultures, you know, science and mathematics, and then the humanities. They're very much kind of pitted together. People argue across the divide, like which should be prioritized, which has excessive focus or excessive prestige. Do you think in many cases it's like a false divide, really? You can unify different concepts from the sciences and humanities?
I think they can be unified as long as there's a purpose higher than both of them. If there's a sense that both are seeking truth, I think both science and the humanities can go very wrong. And in a lot of education, they do. Like the humanities has this kind of physics envy where they want everything to be about number crunching and quantitative metrics. And science has become about activism as well, and making these kind of social claims and gathering data that can be used to push certain policies. So it's very possible for them to both go off the rails in different directions and in the same ways. But I do think that if you want a solid education, if you want to understand creation and the world that we live in, and be a good citizen, like the founder said, then you want a firm foundation of both of them.
Wonderful. And final question, if there was a student just starting at Thomas Jefferson High School, of whatever background, they're just entering their first classes, I guess not right now, this would be an odd time to start, but you know, the beginning of a new year, what advice would you give to them that they could carry through their education?
Get plenty of sleep. One of the famous jokes at TJ was that our GPAs were higher than the average number of hours of sleep we got per night, which I don't know if they have GPAs in the UK, but since a good GPA is a 4.0, that was not good culture. So I would say go deep on a few things. It's okay to say no to. There's so many opportunities at TJ, so pick a few things to focus on.
Excellent. It's good to get sleep. That's true. It's good to get sleep, especially when you're a teenager. Goodness knows. Maybe not 12 hours as some of us preferred when we were teenagers, but you need to get some good sleep or it's not going to be sustainable. That's true. Kitty Helmick, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.